Music.
I was always frightened of classical music.
Film.
This is a commercial for the movie, make no mistake.
History.
English rhubarb rubbing.
And other things. It's Culture My Arts.
Hello, the time is subjective, and these are your culture headlines. Stevie Wonder proven not blind after being caught at Dunkirk screening. Man checks if pen is working on Mona Lisa. Cheeky girls sue Elton John for rights to Candle in the Wind. And finally, Noel Edmonds and Mr. Blobby to star in Romeo and Juliet remake. Those are your culture headlines. I'm Finn Shardlow, this is Culture My Arts, the show scientifically proven to move you up an entire social class. Well, on the line is the pioneer of this theory, it's Dr. Eric Rosenthal. Dr. Rosenthal, does it do that?
Yes, it does.
Thank you.
Culture My Arts.
New York Post calls them almost as good as tight fit. The Times says they're Sweden's best export since pungent fish. And The Guardian claims they're great, but not the Smiths. ABBA have been glued in our ears and thoughts since that famous Eurovision performance in 1974. The Awesome Foursome, who've lightly had an awesome foursome, haven't just saved our divorced aunties from crying in isolation. They saved our money, our country, and our way of life. John Farmer reports on that fateful week in 1995, where ABBA changed the economic landscape.
If the 2008 credit crunch sounded like a McCoy's crisp, the 1995 credit crunch was a hard piece of poor crackling, or a stick of rock from Torquay. On the 3rd of May 1995, a British freight exporting manners to France crashed into the island of Guernsey. With Thatcher having deported everyone who made things, and Britain's main export swamped in the English Channel like a baby calf thrown into a pool of custard, the pound was crunched like that sound effect I played earlier. But if that wasn't enough for you, here's one of my foot, stepping on some cornflakes. Amid the calamity, the stock exchange went mad and inflation went massive. Leading British economists had to act fast to maintain day-to-day life, implementing a strange new currency.
When the pound fell as harshly as it did, we suggested to the Prime Minister a quick fix, which was that a common item must become the temporary currency. It had to be mutually owned amongst at least 90% of the general public. It had to be of a similar value to the pound. And when we crunched the numbers, we discovered the only choice was Abbott's gold CDs.
When you say crunch the numbers, is that a similar crunch to the credit crunch?
No, it's a different one.
We're going to cross over to number 10 Downing Street, where the Prime Minister will make a speech on the new emergency currency to be implemented from tomorrow. This is him speaking now.
After financial crisis talks in cooperation with the IMF, the Cabinet are agreed on declaring the ABBA Gold Compact Disc as an emergency substitute in place of the pound. British government officials are recommending all persons check at the back of their glove compartments immediately for trace of the new currency. We understand concern is high, however, we are asking for you, the British people's faith. In the words of Benny, Bjorn, Annie, and Agnetha, take a chance on us.
Britain swapped HSBC for HMV as CD shops became the new banks and you could buy virtually everything with an ABBA Gold, except for an ABBA Gold. However, as days wore on, the new currency became complex.
An ABBA Gold was worth a pound, and it worked okay, but we found that it wasn't quite dynamic enough. What if you wanted to buy something worth less than a pound, like a Vanilla Ice album? That's when we had to introduce individual ABBA singles, almost as a replacement for pennies. Say I wanted to buy, a sandwich, I've already eaten a bit, a bag of Quavers, they're very nice, and a drink, let's say a Five Alive, oh, fruity. That would be three ABBA Golds, a Knowing Me Knowing You, two Ring Rings, and an I Do, I Do, I Do. Or as we say now, £3.50.
And that wasn't the only problem. Listen to this next man say something informative and smart in relation to what I say.
ABBA.
Because CDs became legal tender, it meant everybody stopped listening to ABBA. And you can only imagine how depressing that must have been for the general public. We had to turn to ABBA equivalents. You know, Boney M, the Caribbean ABBA, the Beatles, the all-male ABBA, the Bee Gees, the female ABBA.
The absence of ABBA as a musical force had a devastating effect on general living. Obviously, morale was down overall, but there were some real interesting statistics to come out of that week. Take, for example, the 83% increase in DJ suicides compared with the 77% decrease in wedding receptions. It seemed that, without ABBA, some aspects of social life were redundant.
More positively, the new currency gave ABBA's most devoted followers something they'd never had before. Affluence, self-respect, and a high standing.
With the financial world turned upside down, who became the corporate big daddies? It was people with large ABBA collections. And so, overnight, it went from being entrepreneurs, stockbrokers, and CEOs to grandmas, sensitive men, and people on the receiving end of rubbish Secret Santa presents. It was a divine karma, in a way. God's way of saying, here. Have a second chance.
After a week, the botched up freight was recovered. Recession was kaput and the pound was reinstated. Britain's trade with France continues stably and begrudgingly to this day. Nevertheless, when all world order collapsed in Britain for 7 days, we needed money, 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 and ABBA responded to our SOS. For that, we say thank you for the music.
Taking a bath in culture. Culture my arts.
This is Culture My Arts. The odds are 2-1, 8-2 and 18-1. Coming up, we make an artist paint 1,000 words. But first, our travel segment. If Buckingham Palace has a carbon monoxide leak, then he's going to be our next king. That's right, Prince Gilbert is back again for this week's episode of Culture Shock, the segment where we send the rambunctious royal to various locations in the UK.
Hello, greetings, buongiorno, hello. I'm Prince Gilbert, and today I'm visiting one of the places Daddy put on my do not travel list. It's Liverpool.
Liverpool is the most highly developing nation outside of London. Not only do they have their own language, much like the French, but more often or not, they've been ahead of the curve on things like popular music, reality stars, and public transport. Today, I'm going to be asking the people of Liverpool what it is to be what they call a Scouser. Is the spirit of Liverpool as simple as a busker doing a cover of All You Need Is Love and talking about the strikes? Or is it much more than that? Let's find out. What do you say to people who think that Liverpool is full of ghastly vagabonds and juvenile offenders?
I don't know, boss. Just think it's like proper misguided. We're just like anywhere else, you know. We have good bits, we've got bad bits. We just want to crack on and live life.
Right, so you've never thought about stealing?
Nah, boss, we're not about that. This is typical media, innit? You just want me to look like a villain, don't you?
Oh, no, it's just,
You ain't fooling me, are kid?
No, sorry, sir, I'm not a homosexual. We couldn't have possibly bear a child together.
You are?
We don't have a kid.
You're so ignorant, you know that.
Hello, pounded individual. I'm just doing interviews for a radio piece about Liverpool. Do you always come out in these treacherous conditions, do you?
It's me.
Exactly. I mean, usually on a day like today, I'd look out the window, do a little yawn and get back into bed. Safe in the knowledge that it's probably a write-off.
Well, some of us have jobs to do here. You know, like, I've just come from an early shift down at the warehouse. You know, I have to set my alarm at 4:30, like.
Oh, so you set alarms, do you?
Do you not?
Oh, only as a kind of practical joke on my wife, Bonnie. What I do is I make the alarm go off at about 8 a.m. and shout, "Time for work, Etta!" And we have a small chuckle about it and carry on sleeping.
Right, okay.
Who are your favourite Liverpudlians?
The Beatles.
Oh, they're your favourites, aren't they?
That's right, yeah. We love Paul, John, Ringo and the other one.
Historic Liverpudlians, aren't they?
They're historic.
They did the, you know, they goes, Here comes the sun.
Yes.
The one that goes, Hey Jude, don't be afraid. And, you know, what's the one that goes,
Cheer up, sleepy Jean.
Yes, that's right, yes. What are Liverpudlians the best in the world at?
Pulling.
Pulling.
Yeah, like getting girls and that.
And say if I wanted to pull in this fine city you got hanging, bro, how would I go about doing so?
Just go up to a girl and say, oh, hello princess, how are you?
What if I was talking to an actual princess?
Like who?
My wife. Where's your favourite place in Liverpool?
Probably the docks.
For me, it's probably the Natural History Museum.
I don't know. The art club's quite good as well.
Cavern's not too bad either.
Hello, sir. What's the best thing about being a Liverpudlian?
Not robbing houses.
You're not robbing houses?
Yeah.
Is that it?
Well, no, I've done shops as well and that, like...
Now, I'm just asking a simple question. Have you ever thought of stealing?
I'm not going to answer that question.
Oh, come on, surely you thought of stealing something.
Listen, mate, you're really getting me angry now.
What about a car?
Nah.
A phone?
Nah.
Well, what about this microphone? I've watched you eyeing it up.
Oh, you'd love that, wouldn't you, me stealing your mic? That'd be good, wouldn't it? That'd paint your picture of Liverpool quite nicely, wouldn't it?
Go on then, steal it.
Is that what you want me to do? Steal it? That's exactly what you want from me, innit? I'll be a typical scouser and steal it if you want me
to. Well, then steal it.
You want me to steal it then, eh? I'll steal it to prove a point.
I'll steal it then. Come on, come on.
Look at me, look at me. I've got a mic. I've got a fuzzy mic.
He's stealing it.
It's fuzzy on the ends.
Hello, princess.
F*** off.
No, not interested.
Twice as pretentious as your local Cafe Nero. Culture, my arts.
So yeah, she tripped on a meringue, broke her head right off. Yeah.
The latest culture headlines. Brian May admits to macaque hands. It is a pipe, says the Mail. Italian PM orders Leaning Tower of Pisa to be made straight. And finally, Belgium ban the Macarena. Those are your culture headlines. Hello, this is a radio show called Culture My Arts. Don't tell your friends about it, otherwise you won't be better than them. Now, if you haven't already got rid of it and replaced it with a nice portrait or pedigree dog, Gary Field's going to tell you what's been on the box.
TV Guide.
Put the telly on.
Put the telly on.
Thanks, Finn. It's been a great week for those of us who like to watch the pictures and hear the sound. As Question Time returns on BBC One. There was a gripping clash between the audience and the panel. Have a listen to this.
The man up there without his shirt on. No, not that one. The one with the swimming cap on.
Oh, yeah. Oh, here, yeah. Thank you very much. I just want to just say that to the Labour MP on the panel, he's given all this about his constituency being working class, but you don't know, do you? You don't know what it's like to have odd socks, you know? You don't know what it's like to stand in the queue at the post office, you know? You don't know what it's like to have an unattractive wife, you know that? You just don't.
Sir, may I appoint you to the Tory gentleman on my left? His wife is far more attractive than mine.
No. I think that is most unfair. My wife is far more from desirable. I'd go far as to say she's more unattractive than the wife of the gentleman over there.
Oh, that's rubbish. Rubbish, you don't know anything. My wife is hideous. I'd rather kiss your wife, sir.
As usual, BBC Four had some fantastic programming this week with a stunning documentary on the relationship between nature and sport. This clip features an interview with insectologist Jessica Jessop.
Contrary to popular belief, team sports are not man-made. They are intrinsically born from the organisms around us. Take the dung beetle, for example. Without them, we wouldn't have rugby. When we see what appears to be a large group of dung beetles fighting over a chunk of feces, what is actually taking place is a scrum. Their anatomy scientifically proves this. When you examine a dung beetle under a microscope, you can see tiny nodules on their legs, almost like studs. The pincers function almost as a gum shield, and on their backs are little numbers.
And a very special documentary on BBC Two, as reporter and journalist Jeremy Brooke presents a two-hour special on prison libraries.
And here we are inside the library at Wakefield Prison in West Yorkshire. Very, very quiet in here, and as expected, the crime section is extremely busy. For a criminal, picking up a book on Jack the Ripper is like us buying Katie Price's autobiography. They're like celebrities to these people. The staff here have told me that Tony Blair's memoirs has a 100-strong waiting list, arguably made up of prisoners eager to find out how to commit atrocities without culpability. That's the only dream some of these people can hold on to. Hello there, fine prisoner. What are you reading?
The Waves by the great novelist Virginia Woolf. It's made up of soliloquies spoken by the main characters, and each of them explore very expansive ideas about individuality, self-reflection, and the need for community and a sense of belonging. It's really quite beautiful.
And what are you in prison for again?
4 counts of indecent exposure, double homicide, and I drown my neighbour's cat.
And those are just some of the highlights from last week's television. Back to you, Finn.
Gary, do you actually like watching television?
Well, yeah, of course.
Really? You're joking.
Surely you have a telly, Finn.
We have a TV in my house, but you're only allowed to watch it if you're deaf or making fun of someone who watches TV. Otherwise, it's purely decorative.
Oh, right.
Anyway, I've had enough of you. Let's go to Andrea, who's been watching the emails. What was the question of the week this week?
Well, if you go to the website culturemyarts.com/question of the week, you'll see some of the fabulous responses we got for last week's question, best audiobooks for a coma patient. So yesterday we thought we'd post a similar kind of question, best songs to die to, and we've already got replies flooding in.
Take it away then, Andrea.
Derek from Croydon has got in touch to say that he's been a gymnastics teacher for 12 years and he'd like to blast Van Halen's Jump as he triple somersaults off the Millennium Bridge.
Great bridge.
Having a pillow held over your face to the Fugees, Killing Me Softly. That one's from Connor in Chiswick, who's 9. Thank you, Connor.
Lovely stuff.
And Barry in Gloucester says he would love to hear AC/DC, Burning the House Down, and just take a load of paracetamol.
So who's the winner this week?
The winner is Albert, who's a farmer in the Staffordshire Moorlands, and he says he'd like to walk out into his sheep field, stuff some gunpowder down his long johns, and go out with a bang. All to the sound of the B-52's Hot Pants Explosion.
So Albert wins this week's prize of a DAB Plus Goodman's retro-style digital radio. Let's ring him up now and tell him the good news.
All right, hello.
Albert, it's Finn from Culture My Arts. You're live now. We're happy to say you've won this week's prize of a brand new digital radio. How do you feel?
Not good. Not very good at all.
Come on, Al, it's got to let the finish. We're trying to help, eh?
You can't help. Nobody can help.
Another happy prize winner on Culture My Arts.
Just to make sure for any listeners who are listening in the lower tax bracket, this is not Talk Sport. Move your dial slightly to the left. I'll give you a few seconds. Cruel, maybe, but we all know this is not for them. Anyway, next we talk to a man who knew this man. And if you say run, I'll run with you. There's a star.
That's right, next to me I have Jerry Cole, ex-guitarist and producer for the recently clogs-popped David Bowie. Jerry worked with Bowie from 1967 up until his retirement from life 2 years ago. Well, Jerry isn't ready to hang up the guitar just yet, releasing his new record, Underrated Genius, this month, and a biography earlier in the year about David Bowie entitled Not All He Was Made Out To Be. Jerry, it's nice to have you here today. Tell us more about your role when you worked with Bowie.
Well, I did more than people think. Space Odyssey? That was me. Starman? Me. Life on Mars? Me. But obviously, Bowie gets all the credit. Heroes is a great example of how he'd rip off my genius. I drove him to the studio one day and my car started making this hideous, kind of like retching sound. And I was furious because I had my MOT coming up. So I shouted out loud in the car, could this car work just for one day? Next morning, I come into the studio. Heroes is recorded. Lead synth sounds exactly like my car. He uses my own words in the track as well.
So what did you do about it?
Well, I couldn't do anything. My fan belt went and I had a blown motor. Car went to scrap. In the end, I had to downsize to a Ford Granada. Fuming I was.
It sounds to me like you somewhat resent Bowie for taking the limelight.
No, that's disingenuous.
Well, other people who've known him haven't had a bad word to say about him.
There's all this thing about how he was a great guy, and he was a great guy, but he was also a show-off. I remember for his first European tour, I put together these outfits for the band. Real classy, proper like Blues Brothers style suits. He turns up in his red hair, space dress and green makeup. I said, Dave, you look like the Cornflakes Cockerel. It was such a shame. He had the voice, he had the songs. But I honestly believe that it was this hideous dress sense which held him back. Without it, I think he could have been the most influential artist of the 70s, more so than Billy Ocean.
And Jerry, you say this event coincides with the spiralling of David's mental health, which then of course led to Dancing in the Street, the collaboration with Mick Jagger.
Yeah, he wanted to dismantle everything he saw. Dancing in the Street, everybody thought that was a serious career move. It was actually to spite Mick Jagger and ruin his career. You've only got to look at his face to know how that worked. But in fact, Bowie's entire output in the 80s was actually just a practical joke on his fan base. I fondly remember he came out of the vocal booth having just finished recording Day In, Day Out. This was about 1987. And he looked at me, cackled, and he went, my fans will lose all of their friends. In the end, it didn't turn out to be such a bad marketing move because his fan base became so lonely and decrepit that all they had left in their hollow lives was buying Bowie records. After he trashed the musical status, that's when he started to move into acting.
Develop on his acting career a tad more, because it was an unexpected move.
Well, if they had gotten his way, then the films that we love and enjoy today would be very different. The list of roles he went for has never been released. Willy Wonka, Oscar Schindler. He desperately wanted to be Garfield in the newer animated versions. When he discovered that no director would cast him, he tried to do everything to get some form of himself into movies. His hair made up the rope in Shawshank Redemption, and in Pretty Woman you'll notice the camera never shows Julia Roberts' feet. That's because he paid her £3 million to wear his carpet slippers for all filming.
Another thing about Bowie which was quite...
Listen, look, sorry, you've brought me in here today. I've travelled to be here. I've just released a new album. Can we talk about that instead of harking on about Dave?
Well, a lot of listeners would like to hear about David Bowie, then we'll get onto your record.
Yeah, but my album's doing great. They've just played it on Radio 2.
Okay, but David Bowie is the seminal artist of our time. He revolutionised the way we look at music.
I think you'll find he had a lot of help from myself and others.
With respect, Mr. Cole, I think a lot of our listenership will think you're being quite bitter, disrespectful as well about David Bowie, maybe even jealous.
No, that's not true.
Do you think you were better than David Bowie? Is that it?
No, shut up, no.
You better than David Bowie?
Stop it.
Are you better than him?
Yes. Yes, I was. He had the looks and he had the charm, but I did everything for that man. And in another world, I would have been in his place. But we're not in another world. And nobody knows who I am. I'm pointless. I may as well stop trying.
Before you stop trying, you are contractually obliged to play a song on air, unless the 30 quid isn't important to you.
Do I get my travel expenses?
I had to get National Express.
No, we don't do that.
Okay.
Well, whilst Jerry sets up his equipment, here's a preview of tonight's hotly anticipated instalment of The Barkers. The drama heightens as Judy finally finds out what happened to that missing Scotch egg.
Brian, I sent you down market with thruppers to go get a Scotch egg for supper, and you come back with diddle. How many times has this happened now?
I know, Judy, but listen, I got something better.
A pork and apple pie?
No, Judy, this. Will you marry me?
Brian, how did you afford this?
Every time you give me threepence to go get a Scotch egg, I saved it. I've not bought a single Scotch egg, not one. I bought you this instead, a quiche Lorraine.
Oh, Brian.
That's 8 p.m. tonight. Don't miss it. It looks like it's going to be a truly gripping listen. We're live with Jerry Cole, the ex-Bowie guitarist and producer. He's going to sing a song from his new album, Underrated Genius. Jerry, what's this one called?
This one's called How I Wished He Were Dead.
Is it about...
No!
I watch as he lapped up all the praise, all the time. Songs and inspiration that he knew were rightly mine. His eyes were sapphire blue and his hair was flaming red. Oh, through those years, how I wished he was dead. Oh, through those years, how I wished he was dead. Before that man met me, he had no dime to his name. I blessed him with my genius, but he hogged all of the fame. I accused him of betrayal, and these were the words I said. You would not believe how much I wish you were dead. You would not believe how much I wish you were dead. On tour in 98, he tries to kick me out the band. Said no more of the hatred, or you're gone, you understand? And whilst I couldn't say it, I could think it in my head. Oh, I'd wake up every morning wishing he was dead. I'd wake up every morning just wishing he was dead. Then I got the call one morning, and they told me that he'd died. Full of disbelief and joy, a teardrop from my eye. I picked up my guitar and I leapt straight out of bed. I can take what's mine now that he's dead. I can take the world by storm now that he's dead. Fast forward to the present, and I've swapped LA for Bristol. I sold my house and my antique guns, well, except for the pistol. Nobody buys my records, and my name is barely spread. He should have lived on, and I should have died instead. Oh, he should have lived on, and I should have died instead. Dave, I'm so sorry. Dave, I'm so sorry. Stay away. Get away from me. I'm going to do it.
Jesus
Christ. I'm going to do it. Go away from me. Get away. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it.
Well, that was this week's episode of Culture My Arts. Tune in same time next week for all the latest news and opinion in the world of arts and culture. Now on BBC Radio 4, The Recorded History of Plywood with David Baddiel.